Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Today we're discussing a topic that affects all of us, toxins. They wreak havoc on our hormones, our immune system, causing everything from fatigue, brain fog, to life-threatening diseases. These invisible invaders hide in our food, water, cosmetics, and even our clothes. Joining us today is Dr. Ailey Cohen, author of Detoxify. As a nationally recognized integrative medicine physician, she's here to shed light on the hidden chemicals we encounter daily, and more importantly, arm us with practical, empowering strategies to defend ourselves and keep us safe from these little invisible invaders. And if you've ever wanted to detox your life, but you really didn't know how to begin, today we're going to clear the air and everything else around you. So I want you to stay tuned. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a nationally recognized rheumatologist, integrative medicine physician, and passionate advocate for environmental health. She has collaborated with leading health and prevention organizations, including the Environmental Working Group and Cancer Schmancer. She's the co-editor of Integrative Environmental Medicine, part of the Oxford University Press Weill Integrative Medicine Academic Series. And in 2015, she launched thesmarthuman.com, a platform dedicated to sharing practical science-backed information on environmental health, disease prevention, and wellness. She's a sought-after expert featured on television, in print, and on podcasts across the country. And she also serves as a legal medical expert in toxic tort environmental exposure cases. Her new book is called Detoxify, The Everyday Toxins Harming Your Immune System and How to Defend Against Them. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ailey Cohen.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure having you on the show. Now, our listeners know this is a topic I'm very deeply passionate about and one that's often overlooked in diagnosing and treating so many different health conditions. To kick things off, share what inspired you to write Detoxify?
It actually began about 15 years ago. I was just out of my fellowship in rheumatology and immune disorders in New York City, and I'd moved to the suburbs. I had two young kids, a two-year-old and a six-month-old, and we had our first child, which was a golden retriever, who was 4 and a half at that time. And so busy mom, new rheumatology practice, and all of a sudden my golden retriever gets very ill. And I didn't know why. I thought he had swallowed a sock. We figured it would come out the other end at some point. And it turned out that he had, at that time, autoimmune hepatitis, which is an immune system disorder where his immune system got confused and really attacked him, his own body, at the liver. And what was so unusual at the time was that he had, it's not only a rare diagnosis for dogs, but particularly golden retrievers. And it took me on a journey. I was so heartbroken that I started to think quite reactively what could be in his water that he was drinking, what could be in his food, what was that toy that he had in his mouth, a red plastic toy he always sucked on even while he was sleeping. So I started to look at his body, look at all of things that could have triggered his body against him. And as I was looking into these things for animals, I was unveiling a Pandora's box of lack of regulatory oversight for human exposures in the United States. And so it really took me on a journey, and it began there. And I was not only heartbroken, I was sort of confused as to why I hadn't heard any of this material that I was reading about 15 years ago in medical school or training when it's so critical to human health. But the journey began there, and it's really taken off. So
yeah, I just love your story about your dog and how it inspired your journey. As a new dog owner dealing with my own pup's severe allergies, I can relate to it. It's like, what is this dog eating, touching? Is it his paws? Is it glyphosate? Is it his food? Is it smell? So it's, you really got to play detective, and I'm doing my best, and he's getting slowly better. So I commend you on that as a fellow pup owner. I did enjoy your book, as I said before we began. You really covered all the bases. Very good read. In the first chapter, you share how many toxins there are hiding in plain sight, and what are some of the most unexpected or commonly overlooked sources that people encounter every day without even realizing it?
Yeah. So one of my favorite topics, which has kind of bubbled to the top, so to speak, and pun intended, is water. Drinking water quality, I think, is completely unrecognized as a contributor to human health conditions. And it's really fixable, as is most of the stuff I talk about in the book. There are ways to handle this problem of, you know, environmental chemicals, especially the unregulated ones and why they're unregulated. But water is really unrecognized. And because we have such old laws regulating our water systems, our wastewater treatment plants that are, you know, now 50 years old in terms of regulation, poor infrastructure, we really have to do it ourselves. Another not commonly thought of contributor to human health in terms of chemicals is food packaging. So we talk about food and what kind and how much protein each day and fats and seed oils and all of that, but we don't really talk about what our food is carried in and whether or not those chemicals within food packaging make their way into our foods and drinks. And I think when you realize what that contribution is and what those chemicals are known to do in studies, evidence-based studies, you really start to rethink not just food and food quality, but also food packaging.
Yeah, you know, it gets so frustrating when people try to do everything right, but they still get exposure to these hidden toxins like BPA on our receipts. Everyone touches a receipt. Contaminants in our tap water. We drink water. PFAS from our, you know, nonstick pans. We all cook. It's so confusing. There's so many hidden risks. What are a few realistic baby steps that people can take to kind of lower their exposure without feeling so overwhelmed?
Yeah, you know, for the people that are like myself 15 years ago, when I had no history of, you know, real toxicology or any understanding of these chemicals, how they worked, what they were made of, and where they come from, I really started to think of the basics. You know, if you're not a toxicologist, the best thing to start with is don't buy as much junk as we think we should. We've been marketed to for decades about how many cleaning products we need and how clean we have to be with antimicrobials and perfumes, often on labels labeled as fragrant or perfume with an E on the end. But essentially, those are loaded with phthalate chemicals that keep that scent lasting longer and have been associated with a whole host of both endocrine and immune system effects. And so if we stop buying all of the junk that we've been really marketed to, not only do you save money, but you don't have to actually go through a deeper dive of what's in each label and each product, or even having to look them up, which is what I offer in terms of just looking at products and seeing which ones are safer. So there's a lot to just scaling back. I describe the four A's in the book and how to manage this issue through the four A's and also a 21-day plan. But the four A's are simple. They're really, number one, to assess. We need to know where and how we're being exposed in our own lives. There's a 50-question survey to get through that. It's very simple. It's 1 point or zero. You add it up. You see where you're starting from. But assessing gives you the starting point. The second is what I just kind of described, is avoid or even swap. So you can reduce total number of products we use in various places, but you can also swap for things you really like and you just want safer versions of. The third A is add. Add is all of the stuff that the human body through anthropology and evolution really needs to thrive. In other words, we need to sweat to embrace some of our detoxification pathways. We have a lymphatic system that helps drain a lot of the exposures that we experience throughout the day, week, months, what have you. We also have sleep, which when we sleep, we actually reduce our chemicals in our bodies overnight. So sleeping, reducing stress and managing the gut microbiome, which is the largest immune system organ in the body, adding in cruciferous vegetables and really specific nutrients that offset even genetic or what we call epigenetic changes. These are all the additions, the add that make our bodies work better independently of taking away toxins. And the last A is allow. Allow is life. Allow is the birthday cake we want to enjoy. It's the travel. It's the plastic water bottles that we have to pick out in the airport because we forgot our water bottle or we don't have access to other types of cleaner water. So life is fluid and we want to allow our bodies to heal, but we also want to be able to have some flexibility so we stay, you know, on track. It's a journey. It's 80-20. It's not perfection. And that's what I encourage people to think about throughout the book.
I love those four A's. Let's talk about an A that's becoming a real big issue, autoimmune disorders. They're skyrocketing. And how strong is the scientific evidence linking the rise of these environmental toxins? And what are some of the underlying mechanisms at play? I believe it's exposure. I don't think it's genetics because my great grandma didn't have autoimmune disorders and I got one from the water here in my town. So what's your views on this?
Yeah, this is a really important question. It's why I wrote the book. Having practiced rheumatology and still practicing for 22 years, I've really seen the gamut of what's coming through here. And really, it mirrors what's going on epidemiologically, not only in the US, but around the world. We have upwards of 7 to 14% of the US population that now has at least one autoimmune disease, which is around 24 to 50 million people. And this is increasing as the studies show. In fact, 1% of the world's population has a rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis. So this is not necessarily because we're really getting better at diagnosing. We only have 15 minutes with doctors most of the time. It's really because the problem is increasing. And the connections between many of the individual chemicals and how they affect not just the endocrine system, but also the immune system. And by the way, they crosstalk each other. You know, they're connected in many, many ways, of course, is one of the big contributors to why we have such a high number. And the mechanisms are variable, right? We have, you know, different things like where our body's immune system doesn't recognize these synthetic chemicals, which have only been in human existence for about 75 years, and thinks of them as similar to antigens or components of the human body. So it's kind of like, they call it molecular mimicry. It's kind of like faking out the immune system because the immune system doesn't know the difference between these outside chemicals and certain components of the body. There's also epigenetic changes, which I talked about a few minutes ago. And that's really where not so much the genes themselves get disorganized or changed. It's the epigenome or the proteins that are sitting on top of our genes that allow or not allow those genes to become expressed. Those can be modified by environmental exposures, whether it's air quality issues, whether it's chemicals in food, water, products, whether it's in our drinking water, whether it's stress. The epigenome is very vulnerable to and can be controlled by lifestyle changes and product choices that are better for us. And then there's the gut microbiome, both direct effects from many of these chemicals in our food system, which are grossly unregulated, or even drinking water that can have effects on the microbiome that keeps our immune system healthy. And so those are just a few of the mechanisms I discuss in the book. But ideally, really what people should take away from most of my discussions and what I share on social media for The Smart Human, or even in the book, is that we are a sponge. Generally speaking, humans are sponges. We've created these chemicals very recent in human existence, and that not only do we want to get rid of them as much as we can, as much as we can control, but we want to make our bodies get better and stronger and hardier in a world we may not be able to control as much as we'd like.
Very good. So we heard autoimmune disease, your body's attacking itself. It's a cannibal. It's eating itself, but self-cannibalizing. But some experts now say it's actually the body targeting toxins and our own tissues are just getting caught in the crossfire. Would you say that's a good perspective?
Yeah, you just described molecular mimicry very well. I mean, ideally, what we're seeing is that the immune system, which is doing its job, essentially, it's doing well. It's just being overloaded by too many exposures that it doesn't recognize anymore, or it recognizes falsely as some component of the human body. And so this is not hard to wrap our heads around, right? Because our immune system has been around for millions of years. And now all of a sudden, we have over 100,000 synthetic compounds that are introduced into our lives, that get into our breast milk, our blood, our urine, and a whole host of other areas of the body that we really have never seen before. And so there is this disconnect there between our epigenetic and our genetic template and really modern day life and living.
Great. I know you highlight in the book several foods that can help the body naturally detoxify. Can you share some of your top items for our listeners, what they should be adding to their shopping carts when they're at the grocery store to support their health?
Yeah. So one of the key ones, groups of really healthy powerhouse foods that help detoxify are cruciferous vegetables. Certainly all green leafy vegetables, between the fiber and many of the nutrients in them, are wonderful. But if you just kind of chunked out the cruciferous vegetables, and there's so many of them that I never even heard of until I started really looking into this, they are wonderful at upregulating the liver's detoxification pathways. And it really starts to churn up what we do experience, what we are exposed to. The cruciferous vegetables have sulforaphane and a whole host of wonderful phytochemicals that really do help reduce what we are now experiencing. And so that's one big chunk. But there's also things, like I said, fiber helps to sequester a lot of chemicals in our diet. Also very good for colon cancer prevention. We have omega-3 fatty acids that, if they're done correctly, which I talk about certain supplements in foods and also the foods themselves and how to identify cleaner versions. Omega-3 fatty acids have been part of our diet and our physiologic makeup in terms of how our body processes the immune system and hormones for millions of years. So those are really important components. Less processed foods certainly is very helpful. And certainly filtering drinking water is very helpful to cleaning out our exposures throughout our days.
Yeah, I add cilantro to a lot of my meals because it's great for detoxifying heavy metals and it's so refreshing. But some people say it tastes like soap. They got that genetic disorder that makes them, I feel for them. What do you like cilantro? Do you add any of that to your food?
You know, cilantro is not my favorite flavor. I get into things like organic, and I will mention that USDA organic is one of the few regulations that we actually do have in the U.S. food system that has teeth. And I will say that USDA organic frozen foods are widely accessible in almost every big box supermarket across the country. And they maintain a lot of their nutrient value because they're flash frozen when they're picked. And so you have this beautiful dance between, you know, lower pesticides and fertilizer chemicals because of the certification of USDA. But you have this beautiful amount of nutrition that we actually need to keep our bodies healthy. And I really just rely on spices. Like, you know, you're talking cilantro. I like cinnamon that's organic. And I like a whole host of garlic. And all of these wonderful Mediterranean type spices and foods are wonderful. I just really want people to consider quality over quantity. I'm really letting people know that the quality of your foods, even your kale salad, is really just as important as anything else you would consider as a macro, like even unprocessed foods or processed foods.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I get people to think because it's frozen, it's not as good as healthy and it's, you know, it's not as healthy as fresh produce. But you know, if it travels 4,000 miles from California to North Carolina, it's not fresh, folks.
Absolutely.
But if you freeze it in California and it's in its integrity and its perfect form and then it's sent to North Carolina, it is fresh, correct?
Yeah. I mean, when I grew up, I wanted fresh foods. I mean, we've always believed that fresh was better, right? But when it's fresh in the supermarket format where it's traveling, like I just had blueberries a few months ago, I looked at the package and sure enough was from Peru. And I'm like, well, I know this wasn't picked that morning. You know, it's like you really have to wrap your head around the fact that our modern day food system has actually put us at a disadvantage nutritionally. And not only do I talk about the foods that are very important to think about, not only just the food packaging to think about, which is all very simple stuff, I promise, but also what are the nutrients we have to add in as supplements, believe it or not, that I believe we are missing. Even if we have the best diet on earth, we're still not getting what humans have needed for millions of years, just given our busy lives, consistency, quality, and all of that.
Yeah. What are some of those supplements? What do you recommend that people add that might nourish or detoxify?
I talk about four of them, but I'll tell you now that one of the most important is really a great multivitamin. And there's references, obviously, in the book as well. We have tons of references to talk about how this is so important. But what I also get into is not just a great multivitamin that has enough iodine, 150 micrograms, but also, and it has all the B's and the C's, but it's been vetted for quality. It has third-party testing for quality and quantity. It's affordable, and you don't have to take 10 pills a day in order to get the nutrient level that it says on the label. So there's a lot of nuances, but once you get your supplement brands together, and it's very reasonable and only a few, like I talk about multivitamin, vitamin D3 certainly is very important in modern day human life, that we need D3 in order to get a blood level that's at the high normal range, not so much how much you take, but how much you need to take individually, given your own personal history, to get to a blood level that's living at a high normal level. So all of these nuances kind of pull together integrative medicine training, rheumatology training, and what we know about D levels and immune and autoimmune disorders. And then you add in this environmental component piece. So it's really trying to give everyone a bird's eye view or a piece of what I do with patients on a regular basis.
Yeah. I'm curious, what are your views on the natural toxin binders like activated charcoal, citrus pectin, and humic and fulvic acid? Do any of these get the Dr. Cohen's seal of approval?
There's so many levels to this where I'm trying to get to the mere mortals that are just not even the biohackers, but people who are working three jobs and, you know, have kids and are busy. And I really get into that a little bit, but not as much as maybe I will be in the future. In terms of posting, I certainly do a lot more of that. But the idea is that there are some wonderful natural components. Like you said, modified citrus pectin is wonderful. And even with children, at binding lead, wonderful studies in terms of something we're exposed to quite often, actually, unfortunately, with the water system. And, you know, like I said, fiber is hard enough for us to reach, you know, a goal of even 50 to 100 grams, which is unheard of. We're getting on average about 5 to 8 grams of fiber per day as an average American diet. I'm trying to aim not too high and lose people. I'm trying to aim with like the highest yield changes we can all make. And then we can always nuance off of that with some wonderful information down the line as well.
Yeah, I know you briefly touched on water, but you know, as I mentioned a few years ago, I became deathly ill with late onset Crohn's disease, eventually traced it back to a toxic chemical dumped by DuPont into our city's water supply. But here's the surprising part. I was drinking filtered water that claimed, quote, to remove 99.9% of toxins. Thought I was safe, but as you explain in your book, unless you're using reverse osmosis, dangerous PFAS chemicals can still slip through. Can you share with our listeners why something as basic as water, something we all assume is safe, can actually be a hidden source of illness? And what can we do to protect ourselves? I mean, these filters, 99.9%, I got sick. Something's up.
Yeah, you know, listen, I've been watching the filtration market for 10, 15 years now. My dad's actually a nephrologist, as is my brother. And so my dad, who's now 85 and still practicing, he was always telling me about the reverse osmosis water that's required for dialysis patients from the 1970s. And the reason was because the material that is used in reverse osmosis technology is that the pore size is so darn small that it catches even single-celled organisms like bacteria, mold, yeast. And that was so critical back in the, with the invention of dialysis, because we didn't want these immune compromised patients to have infections, right? But since that time in the 70s, what's so interesting is that all of these synthetic compounds that are even bigger than those single celled organisms are getting caught in that material too. And so what they didn't even anticipate would be a benefit of RO filter, we now know that that mechanism is really critical now that we have all of these thousands of chemicals that change by season, that change by location in the US in terms of farming areas versus industrial. So there's so much variability. The key to water filtration is really to fix the problem when it hits your home. It doesn't matter so much what the seasons are and where it's coming from, if it's a well or if it's a municipal tap. It's really a matter of how do you control that water cleanliness when it hits your home. And reverse osmosis just happens to be the most aggressive way to do that, that consumers have access to. Our water filters in our home and here at my office, they're $275 now. The plumber is $150 if we, you know, have it put in under our sink, makes it more convenient. But that's an upfront cost, but far cheaper than it's ever been. And I've watched these markets, you know, the market for a very long time. So I say any filtration is better than none. Pitcher filters or carbon block, faucets, refrigerator doors. But to your point, they're not as aggressive. They don't filter as much as reverse osmosis. And I talk about how to vet that out in the book and really understand which ones to get, how they work in your life, and why they're so valuable.
Yeah. And the big defense I get with, we don't want reverse osmosis. That filters out the minerals we need. How are we going to get minerals? I'm like, okay, so if it's the only filter that actually filters out minerals, it's pretty strong. Then you admit that? They go, yeah. So it's strong enough to do that. Then guess what? It's strong enough to get rid of the cancer-causing chemicals. What would you rather get, your minerals from food, which is where we get minerals, or the minuscule amount of minerals from your tap water? Is that where you think you get minerals from? And get cancer or me, autoimmune disease, or whatever the future holds from these forever chemicals. Correct? It's like, that's their opposition. They say, oh, it gets rid of my minerals.
You can say that. All I can tell you is water was never supposed to be a source of nutrition for human beings. Okay? It's really food. And water can be drank. You can drink your water, your reverse osmosis water, without its minerals. So of course, you can always have them added back in various ways. But let's just say, conventionally, you do not need minerals in your water if you're having a nice, lovely meal with your drinking water. The idea is that it does take the baby out with the bathwater. That's what a strainer does. It really goes by sides. It's not smart enough to know potassium or calcium or whatever minerals from, you know, PFAS or any other of the industrial chemicals that we do know that are in that water. So we have to make choices in life. This is certainly a reasonable risk-benefit ratio, if you ask me. And I think because of the volume of water and food that go into our bodies on a daily basis, we need to be thinking high-yield changes. And it's very, very low effort to do that.
What gets me also is so many people assume that if a product's on the grocery store shelf, it must be FDA approved and safe, and they trust our municipal water. Hey, there's guys that go in there and they test it. They check and make sure it's safe. And as you mentioned in your book, cosmetics, soaps, laundry detergents, they think they go through all these safety checks and they're fine, but in reality, that's not true. And you highlight that in your book. But meanwhile, many products filled with these chemicals are banned in places like Europe. Why do you think the U.S. lags so far behind in regulating these harmful chemicals? And what needs to change to better protect public health?
Look, the horse left the stable around the 1940s and 50s in the U.S. when we had a huge amount of new synthetic compounds entering the market in all of our paints and our industrial products. And when we went to war, that created a whole host of pesticides that needed to be utilized overseas, and plexiglass for lighter air fighter pilot planes, naugahyde, rayon. I mean, you name it, it really came out of the 1940s and onward in a big, big way. And here's the thing, there was no required testing, as you mentioned, there was no required testing for safety or toxicity for these compounds before they went into the market. You know, originally, even food chemicals started off as salt and vinegar in the 1930s. And since that time, they have yet to be able to rein in any type of regulation for food additives. I mean, even food additives, there's now 12,000 of them that are considered generally regarded as safe without really any robust chemical testing. In Europe, it's very different. They're much more robust, and they have a separation between the people who do the science and the people who do the regulation, as opposed to the US, where everything's done under the same house. And that makes a big difference in terms of what actually makes it into the market.
That's so true. Talk to us about, I noticed, the anti-chemical dietary pyramid you have in the book. How's that different from the standard food pyramid? Why is that important for immune health?
So when I was thinking about my own philosophy after doing all of this research and studying in these various areas, I looked at Dr. Andrew Weil, his food pyramid, which is the anti-inflammatory food pyramid that I trained with him and I adore him. And then I also looked at Mark Hyman's Pegan Diet. I was kind of looking at all these different pyramids to create my own. And what I realized was what was missing, again, is that quality issue. Why are we not thinking about quality? Why aren't we thinking about water? And why are we thinking not about food packaging? So I add those in to a very almost Mediterranean type recommendation for inflammation reduction. That has been the most well-studied diet. And so I do think it's very important to consider that. But I also really believe that quality is so critical. And in fact, there's studies in the book that talk about whether or not conventional Mediterranean diets are more problematic even than even standard American diets if they are loaded with pesticides. So you have to be thinking quality, and the pyramid was a really simple way to visualize some of these risks and how to manage them.
Yeah, you do share some really powerful patient stories where toxins turned out to be the hidden root cause of several people's illnesses. Is there one case that stands out particularly, something that maybe you were very surprised by the results, even made your jaw drop when they followed your Detoxify program?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about some of the most common exposures that may be affecting people, but early on when I was discovering this, certainly it was all shocking. I mean, everything was shocking to me, right? Because this was not something I was even trained in. I had to teach myself and go to the best resources and read all of the peer-reviewed studies from around the world. And one of the most common things that happened to people is they start to have a lot of fatigue. And fatigue is such a non-tangible, very subjective concern and symptom. And so I walk through, for instance, one of the patients, I walk through his life and try to go about how I figured out where his fatigue could be improved and where it was coming from by simply doing a combination of integrative medicine and rheumatology, but also this environmental health questionnaire and really kind of getting to the bottom of it. And you know what? It's about detective work. It's about really asking the right questions. It's about making simple, simple lifestyle changes and product choice changes. And believe it or not, it worked for this patient, and it's worked for so many patients that come through here with fatigue. You still need to know endocrinology. You still need to know about nutrition. You need to know about what people are taking, because you don't want to take stuff that's going to harm them. Putting that all together, it's remarkable how people can do without even having to add in any medications or even more medications.
Yeah, you know, I've been interviewing health experts for about 3 decades now, and while there's plenty of debate about diet, nutrition, almost everybody agrees on one thing. Sugar is the leading cause of disease, but honestly, I think environmental toxins have now surpassed sugar as being a bigger threat. Our great-grandparents, you know what they did? They ate sugar. They enjoyed ice cream and candy bars, and they didn't face today's obesity epidemic or this explosion of chronic diseases we're seeing now. We're constantly exposed to, as you bring up in the book, endocrine-disrupting chemicals. So in my opinion, see if you agree, sugar should be officially bumped to public enemy number 2. Toxins should be the top spot.
For sure. Sugar is part of this big problem. And by the way, I will tell you how the two interact with each other is that many of these chemicals really do work against our weight loss ability and also really add weight because they're called obesogenic chemicals because they're making fat cells as one mechanism. They're making fat cells coming out of bone marrow turn into fat cells. They're also making fat cells grow larger. And there's a blockage of something called adiponectin, which is anti-inflammatory. So when you block that, you actually have more inflammatory processes. So there's a lot in the way that not just the sugar, which could be the fuel, also with the mechanism, which could be the chemicals, really interact to mess with our body's metabolism. And I talk about that as well in the book. So, you know, when we think about weight loss and diet and this, you know, everyone's really looking for that. We really need to be thinking about the chemical component that contributes to this problem. And by simply pulling some of those chemicals out of our lives, we are really helping our weight loss journey, but also keeping our metabolism healthy as well.
Yeah, you bring up a good point of obesogens because these chemicals quite often make us crave sugar. So if that's public enemy number one, which is the obesogens, it pulls in public enemy number two, which I'm declaring it's sugar public enemy number two now.
Yeah. No, and listen, these are all environmental exposures, right? So when you have that as the heading, you know, you're also considering things like food packaging, you're considering air quality, you're considering even stress, noise pollution, light pollution. Think anthropology. That's what I love to really associate. We were not as humans meant to be with so much stimuli, so many compounds. And it's really a real, we need to make a little more effort to pull back from where we are in modern day life.
Yeah. So I know in my practice, I'm seeing way more females over 40 with autoimmune diseases, newly diagnosed. Do you think it's because of their natural hormones declining that maybe they're more prone to an invasive endocrine disruptor attack?
The thing is, the mechanism for some of these hormone disruptors that also, again, work as immune system disruptors, as I talk about in the book. For instance, I'll give you an example. Bisphenol A, BPA, has been in our products since the 1930s. It was actually originally given in a medication called DES that really was used in the 70s quite pervasively around the world in order to reduce miscarriage in pregnant women. It ended up affecting epigenetically multiple generations from the woman who was given that medication. That was the original endocrine disrupting chemical, if you could think about it that way. BPA also was known to increase fat in muscle, I should say, in chickens. So it was used in the farming industry to really bulk up poultry. And you can see why it can bulk up humans, right? So those mechanisms were well known even back then. And as we sort of move into our lives, estrogen is going to wax and wane, but they also mimic estrogenic chemicals. So we know that there's going to be some component where the disruption comes from the chemicals acting like low-level estrogens and disrupting signaling. And so that's where we're starting to see a big crossover with autoimmune diseases being predominantly female. And there's a lot to be said about that. And I do talk about that in the book.
Yeah. What about drinking wine in moderation? For decades, we were told, oh, it's heart healthy and linked to longevity. And today, now we're told, oh, it's toxic to the body, even in small amounts. What's your views on alcohol? Can people still enjoy a little glass of vino every now and then?
Well, if you asked me this question back in college, I might have a different answer. But currently now, I know better, I do better. I do believe, and I think the studies will pan out, that alcohol in general is a toxin to the human body. It's a socially accepted toxin, right? But it's a toxin to the human body. That being said, I'm a person who believes in allow. And I believe that if you're going to drink alcohol and you're going to have any amount of it, that's up to you. But you really want to consider even so much as the quality. So I get USDA organic wine and beer, and that makes me feel better to know that it's cleaner. But I've also, since learning about more studies in terms of its toxicity and risk for cancers down the line, that I have been more moderate in my usage of it. But I also think quality over quantity as well when I'm choosing the product.
Yeah, the quality over quantity. And intoxicated has the word toxic right there in it. So folks, go minimal. Has the word is warning you. People don't realize that. Like Jawbreaker, dentists will say, hey, the name's in there. That's why you cracked your tooth. Did you read the name Jawbreaker?
For sure.
I always tell men if they're having a problem with bladder issues and difficult urinating to stay away from a specific wine called Pinot Noir.
This is the kind of stuff you need to, you know, work on with patients because they need to have humor when it comes to this process, right? We are in a world where we have a lot of scary things going on. And so your approach is excellent.
That's great. I have to ask you before you wrap up, I got to get your take on something. There's been this explosion on social media posts claiming parasites and worms are behind everything from fatigue, Alzheimer's to autoimmune disease, even cancer. Now it's the sole cause, they're saying. And I just wrote an article about how these deworming and parasite cleansers are just getting out of hand and they lack real science. I had a patient, doc. He comes in. You ready? $600 on a parasite cleanse after a telehealth TikTok doc convinced him that his depression after losing his wife was due to parasites attacking his serotonin and dopamine receptors. So he was prescribed this potent anti-parasitic drug, no labs, no tests, and he ended up in the hospital vomiting, severe dehydration. What's your perspective on this growing parasite and worm panic and the risks of these unproven cleanses?
I would have to say to you that I really think that it's overblown. I've seen some of this material and it's really jaw-dropping as a doctor who's been really looking at not just medicine, but even anthropology, where we had helminths and parasites part of our GI tract. And in fact, there is an argument in science that not having some of those helminths in our GI system is actually a problem, and that it was actually protective very much back, thousands of years ago. So I would say to you that anyone who's not well-trained in medicine, who's going to be prescribing invasive procedures, meaning medications and or procedures, really you need to vet and really do the work to understand really the legitimacy of it. It's not easy. And I will tell you, I tell a lot of people this, look, people are looking for a messenger that they trust. And they're looking for information and ways to make them not feel sick. And when you have that combination and people are really looking and struggling and frustrated, we tend to attach ourselves to snake oil and things that are just work quickly, or they think that it will work quickly. I'm just a big fan of vetting the people that you learn information from. I would always say, look to see whether or not they have any secondary gain by giving you this information, particularly selling products. I'm concerned about, I don't judge, but I don't do any of that. I don't sell products. I don't promote or endorse brands because I want to get this material into schools nationally. I want to work on different demographics. And also, I teach with three different physician training programs. So, I think we just have to decide what our path is. But when you're a consumer and you're desperate, we make really poor decisions. And I've done that myself as well. So, I think just taking a deep breath, doing a little research, getting more information before committing. And certainly if it's invasive, I think that raises the bar even more to being more cautious.
Yeah. And what got me is one of these influencer MD TikTok docs said, if you got cats or dogs, keep them outside. Don't let them on your couch. Don't let them on your bed because you will get worms. If you have a pet, you need to get dewormed. I'm like, what? Are you kidding? So I did the research. I'm like, that's not what it shows. My dog's right here next to me. I'm like, get away. I don't want worms. You don't get it. And it's out of control. It's the latest fear tactic. Trend,
yeah, so. I've seen so many. And, the thing is like by the time you react to one, there's a new one up teed up. So I think in terms of just going where the messengers are that you trust, finding out if they have medical training, where they trained, whether or not they have any kind of associated secondary gain, do a little research like you would on your supplements, like you would on your food or your wine or your beer. I mean, it's really about being educated and arming yourself than it is to being reactive. It's not easy to say that to people because I understand it. But that's the only thing we have anymore because there's no way to vet out legitimacy in social media anymore.
So true. Before we close out, tell us about the Smart Human and the resources available.
Thank you. Yeah. So the Smart Human came out of my frustration and to try to get this material out there. So I started the smarthuman.com website, which has a lot of great posts. It also allows people to take courses. There's links to taking smaller courses like on EMF radiation is a very small, but powerful course. It's, there's one for detoxification. There's one on heavy metals and so on. I'll be loading up more. But also the Smart Human on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I also have the Smart Human podcast, which I interview researchers in environmental health and physicians in environmental health and integrative medicine. So I'm really trying to give voice to people who you would not otherwise hear from because it's not really what they do. And so I'm trying to get them to say their science and share their work before it makes it to the headlines where it can be muddled up. People can reach me, or I should say see me and follow some of this material on The Smart Human and thesmarthuman.com. And then I practice in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm still seeing new patients. I do telemedicine when it's appropriate. And that website is just alycohenmd.com. So alycohenmd.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us. Great information. And you're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate that. I'd love to come back. Thank
you. Yeah, the book's called Detoxify, the Everyday Toxins Harming Your Immune System and How to Defend Against Them. You can get your copy at aileycohenmd.com. And be sure that's AlyCohenmd. That's how you spell it. Also, be sure and check out thesmarthuman.com. As she mentioned, there's so many resources she has available, including detox tips and online courses. I've checked them out. Very interesting. A lot of great podcasts. And you can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and X at The Smart Human. And you can follow me on Facebook and X at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard Dr. Cohen share something today that somebody you know needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yougoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com. And while there, peruse our podcast library and share these segments of interest with friends, family, and coworkers, and on social media. As I always say, sharing is caring. Don't keep this information to yourself. It's too important. Don't be selfish. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay informed and detoxify your body. Be well.